Good afternoon. The K-12 subcommittee will come to order. Ann, if you'll please call the roll.
Chair Atkins?
Here.
Vice Chair Diaz?
Here.
Ranking Member Clark Reed?
Here.
Representative Baxley? Racy? Castor-Dental?
Here.
Eagle?
Here.
Hood?
Here.
Porter?
Here.
Rayburn?
Here.
Renuart? Stark?
Here.
Zimmerman?
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. Let the record show that a quorum is present. Let me welcome our members back. I hope you all had a restful and glorious Christmas and New Year's and are ready to get to work on our K-12 subcommittee. Ask you to please turn your cell phones off and to go through the chair to be recognized. Members, in your notebook behind the second tab is some follow-up information provided by the Department of Education with regard to some requests for information that were made at our September 24th meeting. So I want to make sure that you have that information in writing. If you have any questions about that, you can get with Rod Duckworth, who is here in the audience, and I'm sure he'll be able to respond to any questions that you might have. Behind the first tab is PCB KTS 2014-01. This is a very long bill, and we are going to take all of today's meeting. We're going to take our time in reviewing the contents of this bill. Representative Porter will be presenting this bill. We will not be voting on this bill today, and we will not be voting on this bill next week. We will make sure that this committee has ample time to review and to digest the contents of this bill. But let me tell you very quickly what this bill does. It repeals outdated, obsolete, and redundant provisions of law, as well as programs that are unfunded. It corrects cross-references and incorrect nomenclature. It eliminates certain unnecessary reporting and rulemaking requirements. It makes clarifying and editorial changes. It repeals old graduation requirements and clarifies in detail the graduation requirements for students that were in high school prior to the passage of Senate Bill 1076. The language listing the graduation requirements for students already in high school when Senate Bill 1076 was passed was given to you in hard copy at our November meeting, so you've had plenty of time to review that language. In fact, I've received some comments actually expressing appreciation for that language so that those students who are already in high school, already in the pipeline, can benefit from the provisions of Senate Bill 1076. We have labeled that subsection that details the graduation requirements for these students as cohort transition to new graduation requirements. These can be found beginning on page 55 of the PCB. At our November 5th meeting, Democratic Ranking Member Clark Reed raised questions regarding students transferring into middle grades in Florida and whether or not they're required to take civics. We've made changes to address this question, and those changes can be found on page 48 of the PCB. So the very first page behind the first tab is a color-coded legend. I encourage you to take that out. That will be very helpful to you as Representative Porter goes through this bill. And let me commend our staff for the excellent work, both Marlene and Margaret and perhaps others, the excellent work that they have done to detail, create this chart, color-code it for you so that it makes it much easier to review and to understand. So here's how we're going to do this. We're going to ask Representative Porter to go through each section of the PCB. There's a section on the far right labeled comments. I encourage you to take notes if you've got a concern or a question about any of those sections, to please make a note. We're going to ask Representative Porter to go through this entire bill before we come back to the members to get your questions, your comments, and your concerns. But make no doubt about it, we will make sure that everyone's questions and concerns will have time to be heard, and that's one of the reasons why we are taking our time. We will not be voting on this next week. There are copies here out front for those members in the audience who would like to review them. I'm not sure they're color-coded, but it at least will be helpful as we go through this. So at the end of the meeting, I'll make sure that each of you have an opportunity to ask questions and make comments about the PCB. So Representative Porter, you are recognized to explain the PCB.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. And as the Chair alluded to, this is a very long bill, so please have patience with me. If you will look at the language, the light blue will refer to clarification or redundant language. The light pink will refer to cohort transition. The yellow will refer to conforming changes. The green will refer to miscellaneous items that just do not fit very nicely in any of the other topic colors. Hot pink will refer to removing reporting and rulemaking, and the light green will refer to repeal items. So, beginning with Section 1, this is an Attorney General recommendation, and it would require the Attorney General to notify the JLAC, or Joint Legislative Auditing Committee, of any audit review which indicates that a school district has failed to take corrective action in a response to a recommendation. Section 2 will be amending to exclude school districts, Florida college institutions, Florida School for the Deaf and Blind, and state university institutions from the rule review and reporting requirements. Sections 3 or 4 are conforming changes. Sections 5, 6, and 7 eliminates the Learning Gateway program, which has never been a functional program, and the original appropriation for that program was vetoed in 2002. Section 8 and 9 are both conforming changes. Section 10 allows the school district superintendent's designee to file a truancy petition, whereas before it has been required that the school district superintendent had to do that him or herself. Section 11 is a Board of Governors and DOE legal counsel recommendation that repeals all or removes all reference to the Board of Regents, State Board of Community Colleges, and the Post-Secondary Education Planning Committee. The abolishment and the transfer have already occurred, therefore that language is obsolete. Section 12 is in reference to the Common Core with regard to English language arts and math standards within the definition of Next Generation Sunshine State standards is being deleted because the State Board is charged by law with the continued review and adoption of all content standards for all subject areas. The Board is in the process of doing that now for English language arts and math, and there's no need to specify a different name for a subset of our standards or to impede the State Board's ability to upgrade those standards over time based on the best educational research and needs of the state. Section 13 repeals the requirement for the Secretary of State to furnish an enrolled copy of the compact. No more hard copy is required any longer because it can be provided digitally. Same thing for Section 14. It removes that requirement. Section 15 removes the requirement to submit a reauthorization plan. The states don't reauthorize the NCLB Act. The feds do. And also in Section 15, it removes the reference to the Citizen Information Center. We've never had a Citizen Information Center. The commissioner is still responsible for the dissemination of materials relating to K through 12 scholarship programs and VPK education programs, which is done through the various divisions. Section 16 eliminates the entire section regarding educational television, and key provisions included in 1001.26. Section 17 removes the requirement for SBE to adopt rules for the administration of the public broadcasting program. The requirement that none of the facilities, plant, or personnel of the station that is supported in whole or in part by state funds must be used directly or indirectly for the promotion, advertisement, or advancement of any political candidate for any municipal, county, legislative, congressional, or state office. That fair, open, and free discussion between political candidates for municipal, county, legislative, congressional, and state office may be permitted in order to help materially reduce the excessive cost of campaigns and to ensure that the state citizens are fully informed about issues and candidates, and that violation of any prohibition contained in this section is a misdemeanor of the second degree. All that was transported from Section 16 into Section 17 for your information. Section 18, it removes the authorization to reduce a superintendent's 2009-2010 salary by 2%. That only applied to fiscal year 2009-2010. Section 19, basically the same thing, removes the authorization to reduce a superintendent's 2009-2010 salary by 5%. In Section 20, this has been vetted through DOE legal counsel, and they concur. It removes outdated language regarding to the transfer of benefits arising under local or special acts in force on July 1st, 1968. Section 21 removes reference to the Board of Regents. It's conforming. Section 22 is all are also conforming. Section 23 is an amendment that requires only the school districts that offer controlled open enrollment to submit a plan to the commissioner. If it is offered, then they can submit it. Section 24 and 25 are both conforming changes. Section 26 is an amendment that eliminates the requirement that charter school applicants receive training prior to applying to be a charter school. Training is only provided to applicants who are approved to open a charter school. And it also makes an amendment that adds a reference to the governing board of a charter school system as the local educational agency. Section 27 has some conforming requirements, and it also removes the requirement that the Department of Education train applicants before they have been approved to offer a charter technical career center. The department is required to offer or arrange for training and technical assistance to the centers, and approved applicants must participate in training at least 30 days before the first day of classes. Section 28 is an amendment that removes the word monthly before the reference to a financial statement. This is an Attorney General recommendation because financial statements are not always monthly. Section 29 removes outdated language. If you'll look at the above, it says June 30th, 2011. Those time parameters have expired. Section 30 removes the reference to repealed statute 109.539. In Section 31, it eliminates the K through 8 virtual school program under this section, and I want to specify that, because no students are enrolled. However, this does not eliminate the program, because the program was transferred to Palm Beach, and Palm Beach receives FEFP funding for this program, so that has just been recategorized. There are actually, in case you are wondering, 8 students enrolled in that. Section 32, 33 are both conforming. Section 34 removes outdated aspirational degree goals for VPK instructors. These were to be achieved by the 2010-2011 school year. Section 36 replaces the incorrect term curriculum framework with the correct term, which is course descriptions. Section 37 are conforming changes. Section 38 removes obsolete language. The commissioner has already provided the President of the Senate and Speaker of the House of Representatives an analysis of the cost associated with implementing a separate one-half credit course in financial literacy. That happened on October 1st of last year. Section 39 eliminates the must-pass Algebra 1 EOC requirement for a middle-grade student to earn high school credit, but beginning with the 2013-14 school year and thereafter, like geometry, the Algebra 1 assessment constitutes 30% of the student's final grade. It basically equalizes middle school and high school. It also establishes a transfer policy for a middle grade student who transfers into the state's public school system from out of the country, state, or a private school or a home education program, which provides that if a student transfers in after the beginning of the second term of the eighth grade, the student is not required to meet the civics education requirement for promotion from middle grades if the student's transcript documents passage of 3 courses in social studies or 2 year-long courses in social studies that included coverage of civics education. And it removes reference to the Common Core standards and adds a more generic reference to statewide standardized assessments. Section 40 removes old high school graduation requirements. Section 41 has conforming changes as well as part of Section 42, but it also requires that industry certifications must be included in an articulation agreement, and it prohibits the substitution of industry certification for Algebra 1, Geometry, and Biology 1. It requires that if a transfer student's transcript shows a final course grade and course credit in Algebra 1, Geometry, Biology 1, or U.S. History, the transferring course final grade and credit must be honored without the student taking the requisite statewide standardized EOC assessment and without the assessment results constituting 30% of the student's final course grade. It also adds the following adult standard diploma 18-credit graduation options, which are 4 credits in ELA, 4 credits in math, 3 credits in science, 3 credits in social studies, and 1 credit in finer performing arts, speech and debate, or practical arts, 3 credits in electives, and earn a cumulative GPA of 2.0. It provides that students who earned the 24 credits or 18 credits but fail to pass the required assessments or earn a 2.0 GPA must be awarded a certificate of completion. It identifies with specificity all course and assessment requirements for students entering grade 9 before the 2013-2014 school year. This is part of the cohort transition. Retains the requirement that students must pass the Algebra 1 EOC assessment and the grade 10 reading assessment in order to graduate with a standard high school diploma, and it makes it clear that these students do not need to pass the Biology 1, Geometry, or Algebra 1 EOC assessment in order to earn course credit, and it adds a repeal date of July 1st, 2017, because the students in these cohorts should have graduated from high school by then. Section 43 removes reference to the Common Core Standards, has conforming changes. It adds a new requirement that beginning with students entering grade 9 in the 14-15 school year, a student must also pass the statewide standardized geometry EOC assessment in order to earn a scholar designation. It adds to the scholar designation science requirement that a student who's enrolled in APIB or AICE biology course who takes their respective assessment and earns the minimum score necessary to earn college credit meets the science requirement without having to take the statewide standardized Biology 1 EOC assessment. And it also basically amends the same thing for a social studies requirement that the students who takes the APIB or I think ACE you can call it course that in U.S. that includes U.S. history and earns the minimum score necessary to earn college credit meets the social studies requirement without having to take the statewide assessment. Section 44 has conforming changes. Section 45 removes the option for SBE to adopt rules, the State Board of Education. That's because the law is self-executing. No rule is actually needed. Section 46 is conforming changes, as are Section 47 and 48. Section 49 changes the term student to teacher. That was just basically a typo. Section 50 is an Attorney General recommendation that adds a reference to 11.45 that requires the Attorney General to conduct annual financial audits and operational audits of school districts every 3 years and removes the date school districts could begin meeting the criteria for being designated an academically high-performing school district. That was the 2004-2005 school year that has passed. Section 51 removes the definition adult high school credit program as amended by this bill. This is nowhere else in the law, this particular term. Section 52 revises the requirement that the Board of Governors must adopt rules to correctly require the Board of Governors to adopt regulations regarding academic credit for online courses. Section 53 removes obsolete language authorizing a degree program at FAU. And Section 54 removes obsolete language authorizing a degree program at USF. Section 55 removes the provision establishing the board of directors for the Johnny Bird Senior Alzheimer's Center and Research Institute, and that has been vetted through
Speaker Burt, correct?
Yes, and he is in full support of this. Section 56 removes obsolete language regarding the training school consolidation pilot projects. The transfer of those programs occurred in 1999, and therefore that language is obsolete. Section 57 is conforming. Section 58 removes reference to a non-existent statewide toll-free hotline. Section 59 removes the obsolete date of December 1st, 2008, and the reference to subsection 5, and removes obsolete language requiring the DOE to develop a model policy that has already been done. It also removes obsolete language relating to the distribution of safe school funds for the 2009-2010 school year. Section 60 is a repeal for a DOE to have developed a model policy. They've already done so. The language is obsolete. 61, 62, 63, and 64 are conforming. Section 65 removes the 2012-2013 mathematics adoption requirement option and provides a statutory cross-reference to 1006.283. Section 66 is clarifying, removes unnecessary language relating to a parent's ability to purchase instructional materials from the district school board, and it otherwise provides parents to provides parents the ability to purchase instructional materials. Section 67 removes the popular name and acronym and states that the definition of student with a disability is applicable to all of Chapter 2007, not to this act, so they don't have to refer back to the acronym. Section 68 removes outdated information on states that have adopted legislation recognizing the ASL. The task force has submitted the report and guidelines and therefore is no longer needed. It removes obsolete dates as well. Sections 69, 70, 71, and 72 are all conforming. Section 73 removes a reference to Common Core Standards and FCAT and adds a generic cross-reference to statewide standardized assessments. It removes reference to repealed statute 1003.428, which are old high school graduation requirements, and adds references to the adult high school credit graduation requirements. It states that middle grade student in Algebra 1, Geometry, or Biology 1 must take the statewide standardized EOC assessment for those courses and must not take the corresponding subject and grade level statewide and standardized assessment. It states that a student's performance on the Algebra 2, when it is implemented, and Biology 1 EOC assessment constitutes 30% of a student's final course grade in conformance with 1003.4282. It specifies that the waiver of assessments results on a student's transcript, as currently required by law, must be limited to a statement that performance on an assessment was waived for the purpose of receiving a course grade or a standard high school diploma as applicable. It removes rulemaking requirements and instead requires the commissioner to establish and publish on DOE's website an implementation schedule to transition from the statewide standardized reading and writing assessments to the ELA assessments and to the revised math assessments, including Algebra 1 and Geometry. And it removes the requirement that the state board designate an additional cut score on EOC assessments that identifies a student as a high achieving, not necessary because EOC assessment results are already evaluated using five levels to indicate the level of performance. 74 has conforming references. It also removes reference to the Common Core State Standards and FCAT and adds a more generic reference to statewide standardized assessments. These last three amendments are all clarifying references. Section 75 is conforming. It also removes the requirement to implement a turnaround option because the time period schools requiring schools to implement one of the turnaround options has expired. It provides when a school the provision has expired. beg your pardon. It also removes the requirement to implement a turnaround option because the time period requiring a school classified in the lowest performing category to implement one of the turnaround options has expired. That was 2011-2012. Section 76 removes provisions regarding supplemental education services. These services are not required by federal law and are not funded. This is a defunct section of law. It is an unfunded mandate. That does not mean that they cannot offer these services. They just do not, they are not required to by federal law. Section 78 removes the requirement that the commissioner adopt best financial management practices. The commissioner last adopted these best practices in 97-98, and APAGA no longer conducts financial management practice reviews because they are no longer funded for that purpose. Section 79 removes obsolete language regarding 2007-2008 resident tuition increases and obsolete beginning and effective dates. Section 80, 81, 82, and 83 are all conforming. Section 84 removes the Seminole and Miccosukee Indian Scholarship Program. These programs have not been funded for three consecutive years, and 1009.96 repeals financial assistance programs that were not funded for three consecutive years. They were last funded in 2001. Section 85, virtually the same thing. Statute 1009.96, again, repeals financial assistance programs that have not been funded for three consecutive years, and the Virgil Hawkins Fellowship Assistance Program was last funded in 2003. Section 86 and 87 are conforming. In Section 88, 1009.96 repeals, as I mentioned before, financial assistance program not funded for three consecutive years. It removes the authority to create an education loan authority. In reality, only St. John's County adopted that, and then they repealed it in 1995. Section 89 removes outdated authority for mill leverage that expired in 2011 and 2012. Section 90 and 91 are both conforming. Section 92 removes the requirement to develop a long-range plan for educator recruitment and retention due to the low needs for teachers. It eliminates the reference to the Teacher Lifeline Network and the First Response Center because the center and the network do not exist. And it removes reference to HOUSE, the High Objective Uniform State Standards of Evaluation, because that no longer exists. Section 93 is clarifying language. It adds the term assessment prior to the word score. Section 94 removes obsolete language affecting fiscal years 2009-2010 and 10-11. Section 95 adds a cross-reference to 1012.3401 requirements for measuring student performance in instructional personnel and school administrator performance evaluations. It also has conforming language and adds a cross-reference regarding requirements for measuring student performance in instructional personnel and school administrator performance evaluations. Section 96 removes outdated language that requires SBE to review rules for speech language services by October 1, 2003. Section 97 removes outdated reporting requirements that were from January 2005. That requirement has passed. Section 98 removes outdated language for applicants who receive a certificate prior to June 25, 1986. Section 99 removes the Dale Hickam Excellent Teaching Program. That program was last funded in 2010-2011. Section 100 removes the $225,000 limitation on compensation. Later in time, law restricts to $200,000 and renumbers subsequent subsections. And Section 100 and 101 are in direct conflict with each other because Section 101 removes the $225,000 limitation on compensation and later in time restricts
No, that should be the opposite.
Okay, and this is SUS. All right, so Section 100 refers to Florida College System, and 101 refers to the student state university system. Section 102 adds the requirement that a kindergarten teacher must also participate in continuing education training provided by the Department of Children and Family. Prior to that, it required teachers in 1st through 12th grade to participate in that continuing education. And that was for identifying and reporting child abuse and neglect. Section 103 is conforming. Section 104 removes the above quoted language in regard to the Davis-Bacon Act and any federal grant funds appropriated for construction would include the necessary federal accountability requirements in accordance with the Davis-Bacon Act. There is no trust fund in 1243. Section 105 removes duplicate requirement for toxic substance precautions in the construction, repair, or maintenance of educational facilities. Again, that's a duplicate requirement. Section 106 removes a provision authorizing a land acquisition and facilities advisory board. Section 107 is in reference to a defunct statute that's no longer in effect. It removes authorization to use PICO funds for new construction, remodeling, or renovation of private sector building that must be leased back to the school board. Section 108 removes outdated DOR emergency rulemaking authority, and DOR does concur on this. And Section 109 provides an effective date upon becoming law. Thank you for bearing with my tongue tangles.
Wow, thank you very much. I think you did that in about 24 minutes.
Really?
Did I go too fast? I'm sorry if I did.
So, members, we now have about an hour and a half that we can sit around and ask questions, or you can express your support or your concern about various sections. So I want to make sure that everyone has the opportunity to express your thoughts and opinions. So, Representative Hood, you're recognized.
Madam Chair, does this revision basically get rid of the Common Core debate?
What this bill does, by law, the State Board is charged with the continued review and adoption of all content standards for all subject areas. The State Board right now is in the process of doing that for English Language Arts and math. So what we're doing in this legislation is there's really not a need to specify a different name for a subset of our subject standards. Also, there's no need to really impede the State Board's ability to update those standards in the future to reflect educational research or to further reflect the needs of our state. So what this language simply does is eliminates the reference to Common Core in regard to English Language Arts and math standards within the definition of Next Generation Sunshine Standards. It's my understanding that DOE is sifting through the public's comments and recommendations and will take those recommendations to the State Board in the coming weeks, and I would expect that changes will occur and that they will adopt those standards that will tailor the standards to Florida's needs. It's my understanding that's going to take, they will be voted on in March.
I want to tell the audience action packet in color. Just a housekeeping.
Okay, so as a housekeeping, before we go to Representative Zimmerman, the handout that we have up front will report out the action packet with color to make it easier for you. So, Representative Zimmerman, you're recognized for a question or comment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That was actually going to be my question as well, but I do have another one. On Section 42, the reference where if a transfer student's transcript shows a final course grade and course credit in Algebra 1, Geometry, et cetera, that they don't have to take the EOC for that. Does that also apply to those students currently that have earned that credit in middle school Some of them are being forced now to go back and take an EOC when they haven't been in the course for 3 or 4 years.
You're recognized, Representative Porter.
Thank you, Madam Chair. They can bank the credit for taking the class, but they would still be required to pass the EOC. Yeah, in Algebra 1 only.
You follow?
Actually, just to clarify what I was asking, this pertains to those that want to get the higher diploma. They are the ones that are being told they have to take the EOC for a course they took 3 or 4 years ago.
All right, so we'll have Marlene respond to that.
We have nothing but a statewide standardized high school diploma. What I believe you are referring to is the scholar designation,
right?
That is an add-on if a student so chooses. The scholar designation was debated at length last year as to whether it should attach to a beginning ninth grade cohort forward or allow everybody in the pipeline and ninth graders. The decision was made to allow everybody to try to get the designation. As a result of that decision, some of the students who had already taken these courses were put in a position by themselves to have to take the geometry EOC, the Algebra 1 EOC and the biology EOC, because the scholar designation requires passage, not to get a standard diploma, but if you want that special designation, but that was at their option.
Okay, so that, Madam Chair, redress. So that continues to be that way, right? So, I mean, that's what I tell the students that are in that situation. Okay,
that's correct.
You.
Otherwise, we would have simply limited it to the incoming freshmen.
Right.
All right, Representative Clark Reed, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm in Section 10.
Let me just interrupt you for a minute. So as you give the section, I can just ask you to pause while everybody turns the paper.
Oh, okay.
And then everybody will kind of then be on the same page, and then we can better hear the actual question.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're on Section 10.
Section 10, where we're talking about the truancy petition. Is this truancy petition given or filed after there's been intervention with the student and the guidance counselor, with the family to find out why this student, or is this just filed without that intervention?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This does not affect any of the existing procedures. All this does is, up to this point, the superintendent personally had to file the truancy petition, and this gives the superintendent the option to have a designee that can file that petition for him or her. So it does not change any of the procedures, though.
You're recognized for follow-up.
Okay, thank you. Back to Section, I think it's 34, where we're talking about the VPK, the aspirations and goals. We have been trying to get, from the time that I've been here, these aspirations and goals to be met. And I really don't feel that we need to remove the aspirations or change it possibly from an aspiration to an absolute must with the VPK instructions.
Okay, so I didn't hear a question.
Can we change this to make it that the person has to have, that this has to take place now?
So I'll answer that question. This the purpose of this bill is to repeal outdated language. The purpose of this PCB is not to substantively change any statute. Certainly any member is able to file legislation to accomplish that task or any other task. At this point, what we have is the bill has been filed, and any changes that the members here feel are necessary and appropriate will need to come in the form of amendments. So that's where we are at this point. And certainly if you want to file an amendment, I would encourage you to come and talk with me, and let's do that collaboratively so that we can make sure that we're all working together on that. Do you have any other questions?
No.
Or?
You just answered it with the filing of amendments.
Right.
Thanks.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, very good. Anyone else on my left-hand side? Representative Zimmerman, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Could I get some more clarification on Section 17? I'm not quite sure whether this is requiring school TV stations to do this, or public stations, or not requiring.
Representative Porter, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is actually just moving language from Section 16 down to Section 17.
Okay.
And actually, when you look at the language in that's highlighted in green, that light green, it's basically eliminating that entire section and moving it down.
Got it. Thank you.
Does that help?
Yes.
Anybody else on my left?
Yes.
Representative Clark Reed, you're recognized.
Thank you. Just some follow-up on that question that Rep. Zimmerman. So does this mean then that no new stations can be formed or brought into the process?
You're recognized, Representative Porter.
Does this?
I'm not sure I got the question.
Can you clarify
clarify, please,
for her? I don't think she's.
Okay.
I don't think we're quite following your question.
If there's a station that has not been included in the process prior to this, once we remove this process, does it open it up for stations to come in, or prohibit stations from coming in? That's what I want to know.
Does that help?
Thank you. Yes, okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. It could always be amended down the road to bring additional stations in. But this, again, you know, just it moves it from Section 1001.25 to 26.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Representative Clark Reed, you're recognized.
One on, I think it's 42 again, where we were talking about PE. Add language to the PE requirements. Are we talking about reducing the PE requirements, or are we talking about just what are we talking about with the PE here?
Marlene, I'll let you answer that.
We've done absolutely nothing to change the PE requirements, but because Section 1034282 references Section 1034288, and we're repealing 1034288, and 1034288 had all the requirements about PE. You can do marching band, you can do ROTC and all that. Well, when we repealed the old requirements, we had to import that PE language verbatim into the new requirements. So, again, it's moving it from one place to the other. We're creating no new PE requirements, verbatim language.
And again, I'll go back to the purpose of this bill. The purpose of this committee bill is to repeal outdated language. It is not to change anything substantial. So we're simply moving language to make it
thank you
better. All right, anyone on this side? Representative Castro-Dintel, you're recognized.
Thank you, Chair. I have a question about Section 39 on page 7. It's regarding the civics. In particular, it would be the second statute referenced there, specifically where it says, beginning with a student entering grade 6 in the 2012-2013 school year, one of these courses must be at least a one-semester civics education course. And it's the one-semester term that I want to address. It's my experience and in discussions that I've had with middle school teachers to learn that civics is taught as a two-semester course because there is so much content to introduce. I wondered if we can look into how it's being taught throughout the state as if it's a one- or two-semester course so that we don't accidentally jeopardize a student who is given a one-semester course and expected to perform on the end of course exam. Is that, you understand my question?
I'm going to ask Representative Porter to answer that question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that is a district choice. That is a six-month minimum. That is existing in statute. What we are doing here is just establishing a transfer policy for a middle grade student who transfers into the school system from another country, another state, a private school, home education. We're not changing the existing policy or statute. We are just creating a transfer. Yes, that's correct.
And Representative Castro-Dinnell, that's one of the issues, you know, when you look at the argument that there should be local control at the school board level. You know, what we're requiring statutorily is at least one semester. And certainly the school districts can make that choice, whether it's one or two. But actually my son's wrapping up his civics right now.
In one semester or two?
Two. And then he'll have to wait. He'll have to wait to take it at the end of the school year.
Okay. So thank you.
But it's a local decision. All right. Anyone else? Any other questions? Representative Renewart, followed by Representative Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually going back to that same reference, when I'm reading this, in 39, it all says from out of the country. Now, if somebody's from out of the country and they take the civics course in that country, would that apply to our civics and our statutes that we're trying to accomplish by having civics?
Representative Porter, you're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, that would be a local decision.
Representative Diaz.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I know there's been a lot of questions asked, but I think this one might, I'm trying to sum it all up in one question, is this bill, and I know Madam Chair says this a couple times, but this bill doesn't change any policy. This only addresses policy we have already changed last session, and we're just cleaning up the language. So we're not making any policy changes here. Nothing is affecting what's already in place. It's just a matter of the language. Am I correct?
You're recognized.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, that is correct. It is simply a cleanup. Everything that is in statute that refers to how we are doing things is just as rigorous and relevant as before.
And let me just clarify that we are removing outdated language or language that's redundant. We've got the clarifying language dealing with Senate Bill 1076. So that is, but again, that's really just clarifying for all of those students already in the pipeline. I think I saw a hand go up down here. Representative Castro-Dinnell?
Yes, thank you, Chair. I have a question about Section 99 on page 19, the Dale Hickam Act. Yes. Yes, I've asked this before. The Dale Hickam Act is the National Board Certification Program for Teachers and is the most rigorous and thorough program that we have. And I know we are not funding it, but I would hate to get rid of this program. In fact, I would recommend that we fund it if we really want to improve our schools. Can we keep it?
I was just waiting for the question. So as I stated earlier, we're currently not funding this program. I guess there is debate on both sides as to, which kind of came first, the great teachers who became National Board Certified, or was it the National Board Certification that made them great teachers? I would offer that if this is something you feel strongly about, you can offer an amendment.
Great.
To take the bill up.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Okay. Wow. Are you sure there's no other questions?
No.
Okay. Okay, I just want to make sure there's adequate time for people to raise their questions and issues. If you have any questions, you can reach out to myself, you can reach out to staff, to Representative Porter. So, with that, next meeting, next week we'll be meeting on Tuesday, January the 14th. Notice for this meeting has already been filed. So you know that we'll be hearing House Bill 337 by Representative Frezin, and we will be workshopping our middle grades reform language. So we will have plenty of time. If you have questions or issues with this, the PCB that we reviewed today, we have time to work through those issues. There being no further business, Vice Chair Diaz moves we rise. Without objection, show the motion adopted, and our meeting is adjourned.